Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Tuesday, April 16th, 2024, the 1182nd day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't, or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free on a wide variety of podcast platforms, and of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/I'mYourModerator. So let's start today. Around about where we left off yesterday, and we will begin with this piece from Zero Hedge that brings a bunch of stories together and then move to one of the stories mentioned in this article from an outlet that I've cited before called The Cradle. Biden admin says limited scope Israeli attack on Iran still coming. This is from this morning. Israel's war cabinet reportedly met for several hours on Tuesday, and widespread speculation persists over a possible Israeli military response to Iran, but with few clear answers or indications as yet revealed concerning what's coming next. What is clear is that the Netanyahu government is planning on something big to hit back for the unprecedented Saturday night ballistic missile and drone attack launched from Iranian soil. Ooh. Something big. IDF spokesman Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari has told reporters Tuesday that Iran will not get off quote-unquote scot-free. He said additionally, "We cannot stand still from this kind of aggression.
I do mind. The dude minds. This will not stand, you know? This aggression will not stand, man.
And that we will respond in our time, in our place, in the way that we will choose. End quote. The U.S. and other Western allies are still publicly lobbying for restraint and a return to the status quo. This dangerous spiral was kicked off when Israel flattened Iran's consulate in Damascus on April 1st, an unprecedented act of aggression on a diplomatically protected location, and on April Fools of all days. Starting Monday, U.S. officials were cited in various media outlets offering their view that Israel won't strike Iran directly, but will launch significant operations against their proxies instead. And sure, doing the thing that they were doing before and not hitting Iran directly as they said they would do, that definitely constitutes something big. On Tuesday, a senior Biden administration official reiterated what he said is the White House expectation, that the coming Israeli response will be limited in scope. Another official said it is still possible that Israel will strike inside Iran directly, but not in a way that triggers all-out war. There is U.S. intelligence to suggest Israel is weighing a narrow and limited strike inside Iran because they feel like they have to respond with a kinetic action of some kind, given the unprecedented scale of the Iranian attack, the second source says. This is according to CNN. The unprecedented scale of their attack. Yes, they had explosions both in the sky and on one runway at a military installation.
This will not stand, you know? This aggression will not stand, man.
The sources have indicated the Biden administration has not been given forewarning or been briefed on Israel's exact plans. Quote, "We would hope that they would give us some warning so that we're prepared to protect our personnel, not just military, but diplomatic, throughout the region," the senior administration official said. Really? Why? Why would Iran go attacking United States diplomatic and military personnel because of Israel striking back? It's like they're implying that somehow Israel and the United States and the United Kingdom, for instance, and, you know, the other British Commonwealth nations and EU nations are like some kind of global regime that all works together and shares intelligence. And everybody knows that's just a conspiracy theory. There's no guarantee they will give us a heads up. And they know when they give us a heads up, we're likely to again register our objection to whatever they're about to conduct, the official added to CNN. So you get it? There's absolutely no way that the United States is involved in Israel's response. There is no way whatsoever. So if and when Israel does respond, no one's allowed to get mad at the United States, because the truth is we don't even really like know what they're doing. Just like we didn't know they were going to attack that consulate in Damascus. I mean, assuming it was them that did that, not like the United States or the CIA or anything. I mean, it's kind of like when the Nord Stream pipeline or when the Crimean Bridge were attacked, or when Alexander Dugin's daughter was assassinated, or when there was that Crocus Hall terrorism incident. Sure, it turned out to be the Ukrainians that the CIA was directing and funding and arming and providing intelligence to, but there's no way that the evil twin faction in the United States could have known that that sort of thing was going to happen. Now, it's not hard to believe that the fake president Joe Biden wouldn't know about these things, because of course Joe Biden doesn't know about these things. But it's not like anyone needs to run stuff by Joe Biden. What would be the point in that? Honestly, what would be the point in that? Back to the article in Zero Hedge. If there is no Israeli response, then the U.S. is, quote, confident that there will be de-escalation, end quote. But it remains that, quote, any additional moves now opens up a series of other possibilities, some of which are quite frightening, end quote, the official said. So it's either going to be nothing, or it's going to be something, or it's going to be something big, or it's going to be something so big that we could end up in a quite frightening situation. But the illegitimate Biden administration has no idea which one of those options it'll turn out to be. And why is that? It seems like it's because they don't ever get intelligence on anything except what they are able to derive from the mainstream media. I know it seems too crazy for anyone to even consider, but at some point you have to consider that it is at least possible that the mainstream media and the members of the fake administration are both regurgitating the information they've consumed from the same slop trough. Or alternatively, if that's too crazy a conspiracy theory for you, then you could argue that the administration is actually so well-informed and so competent that this is just a ruse. They're just trying to convince people they don't actually have any idea what's going on. They've basically presented every possible outcome. At the bottom of the piece, Zero Hedge compiles some Israel-Iran-related statements and headlines. Quote, Israel sent a message to the countries of the region that responding to the Iranian attack will not endanger the stability of these countries, according to Sky News Arabia. Iran's foreign minister said in a call with China's foreign minister that Iran is willing to exercise restraint and has no intention of further escalating the situation, according to Chinese state media. Reuters reports that the Iraqi prime minister confirmed Iraq's interest in obtaining expertise and arms from the U.S., as well as keenness on security partnership during a meeting with U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. Oh, wow. We're going to fund and arm Iraq? Ah, well, funding and arming Middle Eastern regimes for the sake of political expediency. How could that go wrong? So all of this is a bit like a schoolyard fight. Israel and Iran go to opposite sides of the playground and they gather all their friends around to figure out what should be done. Are these two warring parties going to go shake hands by the monkey bars? Or are they headed for round two over by the jungle gym? To be honest, it actually is pretty interesting to see these little cliques emerge. Who's friends with who? Oh, the gossip is just fascinating. To thecradle.co, U.S. makes failed bid for Iran to allow symbolic strike by Israel. An Iranian military security official has revealed exclusively to The Cradle that the U.S. contacted the Islamic Republic, asking the nation to allow Israel, quote, a symbolic strike to save face, end quote, following Iran's retaliatory drone and missile barrage this weekend. Iran has received messages from mediators to let the regime do a symbolic strike to save face and asked Iran not to retaliate. The source, who spoke on the condition of anonymity, revealed to The Cradle. Now, is this Iranian propaganda? Certainly could be, but it doesn't matter, because we are talking about narrative warfare here. This is information among other information. The only question is, as we move forward, does this information map plausibly onto reality? For right now, it certainly does. In the future, we may be able to say this is true or this is false. For right now, it's just information among other information. He added that Tehran, quote unquote, outright rejected the proposal delivered by mediators, and reiterated warnings that any Israeli attack on Iranian soil would be met with a decisive and immediate response. The reply was delivered directly to the Swiss envoy in Tehran by officials from the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and not the foreign ministry. According to The Cradle's source, the decision for the IRGC to reply directly was meant, quote, to send a strong warning to the U.S., end quote. And I feel like I am mentioning the work we do on Badlands Story Hour more often on this podcast recently, but just last week we covered the movie Argo, which is essentially propaganda about a CIA hoax. But in that film, the characters mention that the IRGC officers were mostly educated in the U.S. and Europe. But yeah, let's definitely arm and fund Iraq. It's amazing how we constantly train and fund our own enemies, isn't it? And of course, that wouldn't make any sense in the traditional mode of thinking about geopolitics, where the US does this and the UK does this and Israel does this and Iraq and Iran, etc. They all do their own thing. It's just a bunch of countries figuring out how to manipulate everything to their own benefit. There is no global plan involved. Once you rid yourself of that toxic mindset and understand good twin versus evil twin everywhere, then you can see the reason why the same global regime would be funding and organizing and providing intel and arms for partner factions all over the world. They set up their own evil twin proxies in every country they're infiltrating, and they give those proxies whatever it is they need to take power and then control nations. Once that element exists everywhere, then it is just a matter of shifting the balance of power, and we can watch that balance be manipulated in every country across the world. So we're being told that the IRGC is conducting the foreign policy here, not the Iranian Foreign Ministry, and that is so that they can send a strong message to the United States. Quote, Iran successfully embarrassed all of the integrated radar network and anti-missile systems of the U.S. and the Israeli regime. The U.S. even activated its parked satellites over the region to do maximum protection and failed miserably, the Iranian military official added. And again, this is information among other information. But is that propaganda or is that true? Which would mean that the claims of the little coalition knocking out 99% of the drones and missiles, that would be propaganda. We know those messages were delivered to us by propaganda outlets whose purpose it is to lie to us all the time on purpose. But we also can't go around trusting the Iranian regime and one anonymous official who we're told represents the Iranian regime. So both pieces of information are just information among other information. We don't just believe the CNN information because CNN is somehow quote unquote American. That would make no sense whatsoever. They tell us Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes and that masks worked. The revelations come as U.S. defense officials have told Western media that they expect a limited response from Israel against Iran, which will reportedly focus on targets outside of Iranian territory. Nevertheless, U.S. officials stressed that Tel Aviv had not briefed the Pentagon on a quote-unquote final decision, as discussions within Israel's fractured war cabinet continued. Why is their war cabinet fractured? I mean, they're glassing the desert in Gaza, we've been told, for over 6 months now, and they're getting ready to glass the desert in Iran. How can they be fractured? The U.S. does not intend to take part in the military response, they confirmed. However, they expect Israel to inform Washington about response plans in advance. I mean, thank goodness that Biden, like Barack Obama before him, thank goodness they are not partners of the Iranian regime and they never were. I mean, they did do that nuclear deal, but that was a different president. But wait, we're also told that Biden wanted to do a new nuclear deal with this Iranian regime. I mean, he's going to do it with this Iranian regime and not some other faction in Iran, right? It gets confusing, I know, but the important thing to know is that if you plan on giving your partner a good, strong pounding, you need to let the United States know so they can provide their consent too. Israel has publicly vowed to respond to the Iranian operation this weekend, which saw the launch of hundreds of drones, ballistic missiles, and cruise missiles by the Islamic Republic in retaliation to the Israeli bombing of Iran's consulate in Damascus. This launch of so many missiles, cruise missiles, and drones into Israeli territory will be met with a response, Israeli Army Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi said on Sunday. Speaking from the Nevatim Air Force Base in southern Israel, which was one of three military targets successfully hit by the Iranian barrage. Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri Khani told state TV on Monday night that Tehran's response to any Israeli retaliation would come in a matter of seconds, as Iran will not wait for another 12 days to respond. So we have a lot of tough talk from the Israelis, and of course, plenty of bravado for so-called Americans with dual citizenship. We have a totally illegitimate administration that seems to have no idea what's going on. They have explored the range of possibilities from no response at all to some minor response, to some major response, to some very, very major response. And then we have Iran saying, if you do anything, we are going to smoke you. And for whatever it's worth, they also have China and Russia and probably most of the BRICS nations on their side. We also understand these situations to be relationships of consent. You're going to have to get consent before you give your partner in the region a good strong pounding. Iran seems to be withholding consent. And what we're left with are the various factions of the global regime alone at the bar at the end of the night, probably trying to figure out if they'll be able to simply pound one another and claim that it was Iran the whole time. A report from a news outlet called Iran International was picked up by Just the News, John Solomon's website. This is the article from Iran International. Will Israel's response to Iran be designed not to trigger escalation? We're not going to go through the whole article. Let's start about halfway down. A member of Iran's Islamic parliament went further. We are prepared to use a weapon that we have never used, end quote, said Abul Fazl Amoui, a spokesman for the parliament's National Security Committee. He urged Israel to act wisely. Experts and unnamed Israeli officials have suggested several possible courses of action. Large-scale cyber attack, hitting Iranian proxies, or covert operation inside Iran. This would not surprise many since several Iranian nuclear scientists have been killed inside Iran in the past, and there have been mysterious explosions in nuclear facilities and other strategic locations. So that sounds like Mossad or the CIA or groups of terrorists that they're funding and arming and supplying intelligence to and directing, just like in Ukraine, have been staging terrorist attacks inside Iran. And I know, Iran is our greatest enemy, at least when it's not racism or homophobia or Russia or parents at school board meetings. But hey, if we say that they're our greatest enemy, then that means that our corrupt and compromised intelligence organizations who serve on behalf, not of America, sadly, but on behalf of the global regime, or perhaps the proxies of these intelligence organizations, can stage as many terrorist attacks as they want, wherever they want. But we're being told that one of the options is to stage covert operations inside Iran. Now, why would they be covert if this attack is justified because of Iran's brutal aggression, this unprecedented attack that they launched against our greatest ally, Israel? Wouldn't an attack in response be justified? John Bolton said we should hit all of their nuclear facilities. Ron DeSantis supporters and other neocons are giddy with bloodlust, worrying that no one's going to let them talk about killing Gazans every day. The whole thing is supposed to be justified and supported by the world's community because none of us want to have another Holocaust. Why, when we all agree about that, would we need to have covert operations inside Iran in response to this very brutal attack? And if the operations are covert and Iran says, hey, the US and the UK and Israel and their intel organizations and their proxies just blew up a bunch of our shit, and they're all like, nuh-uh. Well, then Iran can't respond without Iran looking like they are staging an unprovoked attack, pounding their partners totally without consent. Now, there are places in Tel Aviv where that is totally okay. In fact, this is the Jerusalem Post from February 14th of last year. Is Tel Aviv the gay capital of the world? And I mean, it's either that or Kyiv or San Francisco. But let's go back to the article. Israel never took responsibility for these incidents and never denied it either. Now, also, Israel could attack important targets and keep silent, not putting the Iranians in a situation to be forced to respond. But if they did that, then how would they save face? And the entire thing is so they can save face. It's like Israel is saying, okay, we gave you consent to give us a good hard pounding, but it was a bit too hard, and now we're going to have to pound you back. We didn't say you could pound us that hard. But as we discussed yesterday, there's no way we can possibly know which, if any, version of this story is true. So it's best to interact with this at a narrative level. And at a narrative level, the only justification for any of this at this point for Israel would be to save face. Because otherwise, as I discussed yesterday, the United Nations and NATO and all of these neocons who are really just militant Trotskyites, they are no different than their 20th century forefathers in Europe, in Russia, in China. In fact, in nearly every case, they are the legitimate ideological descendants, if not bloodline descendants, of the very people who propped up those regimes. All of those people, the global governing bodies they're associated with, and the militaries and cartels and terrorist organizations around the world who serve as their armies would be made to look like fools. And so, of course, the purpose of all of this would be to save face. If they don't hit Iran back and the fact that they did nothing becomes a story of its own, this following the narrative debacle that we've seen flowing from this Israel-Palestine situation, all started by the paragliding go-kart incident and all of that following Russia and Ukraine, even all those normie Republicans and neocons must be wondering what in the world is happening with their ability to just demand killings all across the world so that they can hold on to power. And of course, all of us are supposed to be sad about this. We are supposed to succumb to Stockholm Syndrome once again and believe our federal government when they tell us that they are trying to protect us. Just a couple years after making sure our votes didn't count and then mandating we inject ourselves with an experimental medical technology. I mean, every day, the evil twin faction in our country, the Uniparty and its allies, strikes directly at each and every right enumerated in the Bill of Rights. And their academics brag about how a war was fought against Americans to overturn the Constitution and change us from a constitutional republic into our democracy. And they're going to tell us that it is unpatriotic for us to want to see a globalist regime who those Uniparty members just happen to be partnered with, lose power. They're not appealing to our patriotism there. They're insulting us. They think we are actually stupid enough to go for that. And sadly, so many people are so insecure in their own patriotism that they worry other people won't see them as being patriotic if they actually stand up for this country, placing its needs over the needs of our global regime allies. Again, that's a total inversion within the false reality. We have people firmly convinced of something that just so happens to be the exact opposite of what they believe they're supporting. You cannot be America first if your priority is serving the interests of a global regime, no matter how it affects America and Americans. And hey, give this a listen. It's a perfect example of the sort of people I'm talking about. This is the philosopher king of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab's chief midget and eunuch, Yuval Noah Harari.
You have a small elite that pushes things in its own interests, even if it doesn't benefit the vast majority of the population. This has happened so many times previously in history, and it's probably going to happen again. One of the biggest dangers to the planet today is this technological utopia, because probably for the elite it will work. If bad comes to worse, then when the flood comes, the scientists will build a Noah's Ark for the elite, leaving the rest to drown, the rest of the people and then the rest of the ecosystem. But they are likely to be able to construct this technological Noah's Ark, which is probably what much of the elite is counting on.
So yeah, that's basically who's going to be calling you unpatriotic. Let's close out this article. Whatever the Israeli response, it will likely be consulted with the Americans, according to media reports in Israel. The Biden administration has said it will not take part or assist in the Israeli operation, downplaying the significance of the Iranian attack and highlighting Israel's success in thwarting the offensive almost entirely. What we showed on Saturday night was that Iran is not militarily superior, is not 10 feet tall, and that Israel is not alone. White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby told NBC News Monday when asked if he agrees that Iran would be emboldened without a response. Now, John Kirby did not show that. The Biden administration certainly did not show that. Biden, when asked if he had a message for Iran before the attack, he said, "Don't, don't." But they did. They did, even without Joe Biden's consent. Or at least we're told they did, because the truth is, as we talked about yesterday, nothing actually had to happen for all of these narratives to have played out as they did. And now we are told that there might be military action from one country into another country in order for the first country to save face. The administration's stance has angered Biden's more hawkish critics, who have accused him of appeasing Iran and abandoning Israel. Sadly, Iran isn't worried about the United States, former National Security Advisor John Bolton told Newsmax. They don't see Biden as having the spine to cross Iran's red line of not attacking Israel directly. Officials in Iran maintain that Israel's attack on Iran's consulate in Damascus crossed a red line and had to be responded to restore deterrence. The Israeli response would test this idea and potentially trigger a cycle of retaliatory attacks that could spiral into a full-scale war. We're on the edge of the cliff and we have to move away from it. EU Foreign Affairs High Representative Josep Borrell said in a radio interview, "We have to step on the brakes and reverse gear." And it's starting to seem like some of the elements of this global regime are beginning to lose their courage. It seems like we continuously have all of these neocons and warmongers trying to amp things up. And in general, especially regarding Ukraine, they've been joined by establishment Democrats as well. But it doesn't seem like they're ever getting their way. You actually have to wonder at some point if it's Bibi Netanyahu who's not playing along with the neocons and warmongers. We have certainly seen a pattern of characters who the global regime thought they had under control turn out to be working against the global regime. And if that's who Bibi is now, and that's why there are color revolutions in Israel meant to remove him, these attacks on Israel meant to remove him, perhaps the warmongers and neocons and globalists right now are beginning to realize that they have even less power than they thought they did. Now, as I said yesterday, there's absolutely no way to know that for sure. But again, unless they're saving everything up to come after us on American soil, it would be awfully hard to find another option to explain why they would simply let go of their critical strongholds in Ukraine and Israel and eventually Taiwan. But let's shift gears slightly. This was Sunday in Fox News. House tees up 17 bills related to Iran-Israel for this week. 17 bills in 1 week. to respond to this very brutal attack against our very greatest ally. Fox is told to expect a robust foreign policy week after this weekend's events between Iran and Israel. The House is ditching its original plan for appliance week and putting 17 bills on the floor to hammer Iran or show support for Israel. Sounds like they are very confident in their actions. 11 bills will be on the suspension calendar, meaning they require a two-thirds vote to pass. One of those bills would ratchet up some sanctions on Iran. 6 bills would head to the Rules Committee. Included in that batch is a bill to condemn Iran for the attack. Gosh, how will Iran save face under that sort of withering attack? What about aid for Israel? That's still being negotiated between the Speaker and the White House, said a senior House Republican source. Amazing. Speaker Mike Johnson working with illegitimate President Joe Biden to decide how much, quote unquote, American taxpayer money gets sent away to fund fake foreign proxy wars. And Fox News notes that it's possible that the Israel funding might be tied to the Ukraine funding. Now, last night on social media, a picture was posted, a picture of someone holding a piece of paper with the heading supplemental. This was reported as a leaking of Mike Johnson's foreign aid package. $95.34 billion, roughly 60% of which goes to the DIB, which I'm nearly certain is the Defense Industrial Base. And that tracks with what we've been told pretty frequently over the last couple of years, that all of this money that's being sent to Ukraine is actually going to our defense industry, which means what we're really funding are these good American companies employing American workers, and then, we're told, shipping everything they make to this foreign country where it is then systematically destroyed by the Russian military. But hey, at least the defense contractors got to make all that money. But I will also note, to be fair, that we're told those weapons frequently never make it to Ukraine. So if somehow our defense stockpiles are being built up while Joe Biden is being blamed for continually spending on Ukraine, purchasing weapons and equipment that never arrive there because he actually does not have any of the powers that would normally go along with being commander-in-chief because he's not one, well, we have to reserve the right in the future to not be mad about this particular issue, which means that it's not worth being mad about now. It's just worth considering the possibilities and trying to understand what those possibilities mean. But back to this leaked plan. Ukraine, $48.43 billion, $19.85 billion, replenishment of stocks to DOD, $14.8 billion for DOD ops in UCOM-E AOR, and that is the United States European Command Area of Responsibility. $13.8 billion in USAI for Ukraine to purchase U.S. weapons. And that acronym is referring to the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative. $8 million for the IG, that is the Inspector General. $7.85 billion direct support to Ukraine government. Direct support to the Ukrainian government. Nearly $8 billion of quote-unquote taxpayer money. And I guess that must be for the comedic actor and his friends or the NGOs over there. Israel, $14.1 billion. $4 billion for missile defense, Iron Dome, and David's Sling. For real, that's what we're funding. Is the Iron Dome even real? Should we believe things like that when the country who is supposed to have the most secure borders in the history of the world can be penetrated by paragliding go-karts? $1.2 billion for the Iron Beam. $4 billion for the replenishment of stocks to DOD. $3.5 billion in FMS for Israel to purchase U.S. weapons. FMS here is foreign military sales. and $800 million for ammunition plant improvements. Think about how crazy that is. The United States is in the most precarious position in the history of the country, essentially, or so we are led to believe. And rather than investing $800 million in ammunition plant improvements in the United States, we're going to do it in Israel. And for the record, David Sling is like the second level of Israel's missile defense system after the Iron Dome. But the Iron Beam is so much more interesting. It's also sometimes referred to as the Shield of Light, which makes it sound defensive. And that's better than making it sound like we're paying for Israel to have offensive weapons. I mean, Israel is not an aggressor nation, regardless of what's happening in Gaza or the thing with the Iranian consulate in Damascus. This is what they often refer to as dual-use technology. It's really just for defense. And sure, it can be used for offense, but we're not going to use it for offense. We're going to use it for defense unless we have to use it for offense, in which case we totally will use it for offense, but it's for defense. So here's what it is, though, according to Wikipedia. It's a directed energy weapon, air defense system. So we know there are space lasers, and we know that there are Jewish direct energy weapons. Does this count as a Jewish space laser, or is it just that we're not allowed to say that? But let's learn a bit more about this directed energy weapon. The system is designed to destroy short-range rockets, artillery, and mortar bombs. It has a range of up to 7 kilometers, which is about 4.3 miles, complementing the Iron Dome system, which was designed to intercept missiles launched from a greater distance. In addition, the system could also intercept unmanned aerial vehicles. Thank goodness, because that's what Israel was just attacked with by Iran the other day. But let's keep going. Iron Beam uses a fiber laser to generate a laser beam to destroy an airborne target. Whether acting as a standalone system or with external cueing as part of an air defense system, a threat is detected by a surveillance system and tracked by vehicle platforms in order to engage. Some advantages and disadvantages. The main benefits of using a directed energy weapon over conventional missile interceptors are lower costs per shot, unlimited number of firings, lower operational costs, and less manpower. There is also no interceptor debris to fall on the area protected. Disadvantages of energy weapons include the requirement for the beam to penetrate the atmosphere. Clouds may prevent use. Man, thank goodness that no one is working on cloud seeding technologies, otherwise that might thwart this weapon. The beam must be held on the target, which may be spinning, for several seconds, the dwell time as it's called, before enough energy is delivered to destroy it. This makes it difficult to stop a barrage of several missiles, even if the system is effective, so that volley fire of interceptors continues to be required. So their frickin' laser beams attached to their frickin' heads can only stop one missile at a time. Well, thank goodness we're giving them an extra $1.2 billion. Hopefully they will build way, way more of these Jewish space laser things. There is also the possibility of rockets being sheathed in heat-resistant material to withstand an energy beam for longer. Energy weapons may be more effective against slower flying drones with relatively delicate rotors, control flaps, and guidance systems vulnerable to shorter laser attack than fast rockets. This technology may also prove effective against paratroopers, apparently not paragliders, on go-karts. Now, I don't know about you, but it sounds to me like they just said they were intending to blind these missiles and drones and paratroopers. Because not only can this weapon be thwarted by clouds, it can also be thwarted by heat-resistant materials. To be honest, maybe we should just send Israel Ukraine's $50 billion, and maybe they can make one of these that doesn't suck. And I'm just kidding. I'm sure it's the greatest weapon of all time. And I'm also definitely 100% certain it's real. It would actually be my favorite weapon ever if it was just a really, really big mag light and it targets everybody's eyes. But let's get back to Mike Johnson's package. Red Sea operations, $2.4 billion. Huh, what? Use for operations, force protection, and the replacement of combat expenditures. Oh, well, at least the paragliding go-karts thing makes that something that the American people approve of. Indo-PACCOM, $2.58 billion. And that is the Indo-Pacific Command. They are doing all of that very important work to make us think that a war is going to start when China goes and kicks the global regime out of Taiwan. There is also $3.3 billion reserved for the submarine industrial base for investment in dry dock construction, etc., in support of the submarine industrial base and AUKUS, which is Australia, the UK, and the US. They have a project they just announced in March called the Optimal Pathway. What is the Optimal Pathway? This is from the Australian government, the Australian Submarine Agency. Pathway to Australia's nuclear-powered submarine capability. AUKUS partners have identified an optimal pathway that will deliver Australia a conventionally armed nuclear-powered submarine capability as soon as the early 2030s. Elevate all three nations' industrial capacity to produce and sustain advanced and interoperable nuclear-powered submarines for decades to come. And expand our individual and collective undersea presence in the Indo-Pacific and contribute to global security and stability in the region. So they are basically just devoting all of this money to building up a larger anti-China threat in the Indo-Pacific. And if this is a global regime project, as it seems to be, aiming to contain a sovereign China, then one would expect that this project is basically money laundering and will fail spectacularly. This doesn't seem like the sort of international pact that would be approved of by Donald Trump as we watch this multipolar world order emerge. But I certainly have not gone deep on this. That is just my suspicion. Isn't it at least a little bit interesting that our government is about to spend $3.3 billion building a nuclear submarine capacity for Australia? And they don't bother telling us. It's just thrown in with the Israel thing and the Ukraine thing that we already know we have to say yes to. So among this list, that covers the 60% that goes into the defense industrial base, but all of these projects combined only add up to about $70 billion of this $95 billion. So where do the other $25 billion go? Well, let's check in with the mainstream media and see if they tell us. This is Politico reporting on this issue in the afternoon yesterday. Johnson plans separate House votes on Ukraine and Israel this week. Speaker Mike Johnson told GOP lawmakers that he'll try to pass four measures this week to send aid to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan, each in separate bills, according to multiple Republicans in the private meeting Monday. A fourth proposed bill, which is still being finalized, would include a package of related measures, including a lend-lease deal for military aid, a ban on TikTok in the U.S., and provisions to sell off assets from Russian oligarchs. And that is what we have discussed maybe once or twice before. That's being called the Repo Act. And that, of course, is one of those cute acronyms, the cute names for the bills that pass through Congress. You're going to call it the Repo Act. Well, that makes us think of repossession, which makes it sound like we are repossessing something that is rightfully ours. But that's not it at all. We talked about this a few weeks ago, but this has been ramping up for more than a year now. This is from Reuters on January 24th. U.S. Senate panel backs Big Hammer plan to seize Russian assets to help Ukraine. The full name of this measure is the Rebuilding Economic Prosperity and Opportunity for Ukrainians Act. So $300 billion of the money and assets of Russian oligarchs has been seized. And rather than bring it back here to the United States, we're going to give that money to Ukraine. The people pushing for this acknowledge that it is unprecedented, but they say that what Russia has done is just bad enough to deserve it. This is from the Reuters article. U.S. and British officials have been working to jumpstart efforts to seize confiscated Russian assets and hope that Group of Seven leaders will issue a strong statement when they meet in late February around the second anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. This has already passed, obviously. G7 leaders have long argued that Russia is obligated under international law to end its war and pay for the damage it has caused, which already exceeds $400 billion, according to the World Bank. That is quite a story they are telling. Like, yes, we've seized all of these assets, but we're allowed to take them and then repurpose them on our own based on how much damage you've already caused. Will they have the leverage to do this? And will they have the ability to withstand the chaos that they cause when they do? And again, this is from back in January, but they are pushing this right now. Senior European officials said on Tuesday that the bloc was unlikely to confiscate Russian central bank assets frozen in Europe, despite G7 plans to discuss the legality of such a move at a meeting in February. European officials are concerned not only with the legality of such an unprecedented confiscation, but also with the potential consequences for the euro currency. Investors might pull out of euro assets out of concern their money might one day be seized too. Moscow has condemned the effort, pledging to retaliate by confiscating Western assets in Russia, which some reports put at $288 billion. The Repo Act says any seized Russian funds would be used to rebuild Ukraine. It is separate from Biden's request for $61 billion in security assistance for Ukraine. And the article notes that progress on all of that has been stalled for months, and that's true. They are talking right now about the same security assistance they have been pushing for since last fall. Over 6 months this has been going on. We've been tracking it throughout that entire time. So that piece right there is enormously problematic. But that's just this illegitimate Congress getting started. They also want to push through their TikTok ban. And what are the establishment Republicans going to tell us? So that we will give them the approval to go ahead and do this, they're gonna tell us that they'll finally secure the border if we allow them to spend all this money. And how about that? It's exactly the same as it was 6 months ago. Except we've seen 6 months of stories on the news about how bad immigration was, even though it was bad before, and they didn't tell us at all. In fact, they called us racist for even mentioning it. Now everyone's allowed to know about the immigration, and we've already said for 6 months, no, we don't want to pay for Ukraine. No, we don't want to pay for Israel. No, we don't want to pay for Taiwan. We don't want to pay for any of it. And no, we don't care what happens. In fact, we know you're lying to us about these conflicts in the first place. And we know that these are your strongholds, your proxy states that you are attempting to protect. Not in the interest of our security as Americans, but in the interest of keeping your one world, liberal, international, rules-based order intact. But it's too late. It's already gone. I discussed the issues surrounding the banning of TikTok at length a few weeks ago. Don't need to get into them now. By all means, please go listen to that episode if you're interested in my thoughts on that issue. But the long and short of it is the Chinese, in quotes, already have all of our data. It's no different than all of these awful, quote unquote, American tech companies having our data. And the truth is that for this whole time, they've already had all the access to our data they could possibly need at every single point. Maybe they've been cut off at some point. I happen to think that is a possibility. But there is no particular special threat about the Chinese having it over and beyond the people in America who are involved as partners with the Chinese Communist Party and are quite busy already here in America censoring us. When all of your rights are already being violated by your own illegitimate government, it doesn't make much sense to worry about the Chinese Communist Party as reported by our media. We should stop kidding ourselves. We should stop trying to rebuild this illusion that our government is somehow on our side. They don't even care about our votes. They violate the First Amendment. They want to remove the Second Amendment. They're not better than the Chinese Communist Party. They are the Chinese Communist Party. Our neocons and communists, with their global communist partners, created the Chinese Communist Party, empowered the Chinese Communist Party, and made the Chinese Communist Party wealthy and strong. Now, I don't have TikTok. I've never been on TikTok, and I don't like the content that TikTok produces. But I don't want to see our government seize for itself the power to shut down more social media platforms. Because the way they wrote that policy, they have every right to shut down a platform like Telegram. Could they find ways to shut down the other social media platforms once we have accepted the moral principle that it's okay? Yes, I'm sure they can. In fact, it might be worth wondering if they have already written those special provisions and allowances into the legislation they intend to pass. But let's continue. It's far from certain that Johnson would have the votes to bring the bills to the floor, given the procedural hurdles of Republicans' narrow majority that have vexed the speaker for months. Johnson would need near unanimous support from his own conference to bring the whole package of bills up for passage, a procedure known as a rules vote, plus prior approval from a rules committee stacked with conservatives who may resist based on Ukraine aid. And then, of course, they would play another leverage game, each side telling the other that the only way they'll vote for the thing that side wants is if both things are included. And a few news cycles later, we are right back to the unipartisan compromise where it started last fall. Earlier Monday, hardliners in the House Freedom Caucus released a statement saying they opposed using necessary cash for Israel to quote-unquote ram through Ukraine aid. And they're right. Israel has a right to all that money. You have to say that or else you're not a good conservative. In fact, you're anti-Semitic. And several members of the group declined on Monday night as they left the closed-door meeting to say if they would support bringing bills to the floor at this point. The American people have made it as clear as they possibly could that we better secure our border before we spend more money in Ukraine. They are getting ready to fly off the cliff, Representative Dan Bishop of North Carolina said. Now, Dan Bishop seems like an all right guy. He is supposedly a really, really good guy. And I suppose that it is technically, literally true that they had better secure the border before more money is spent on Ukraine. But the deeper truth is that the answer on spending more for Ukraine is no, no matter what else is done. Securing the border should have been a necessity to pass any of the spending packages at absolutely any point. Anything other than that is essentially at this point tantamount to treason. These people are not serving legitimately in the first place, and they are sending this legislation to an illegitimate president for him to sign. Securing the border is not their concession to us. It is a bare minimum bar to cross to even be considered to be doing your job at all, much less doing it well. The American people are not telling Dan Bishop that once they secure the border, then we can send money to Ukraine. So all they need to do is pass legislation that says it secures the border, and then they can have their Ukraine money. That's how he's presenting it, and that is how it's being sold to us. Now, I would love to think that Dan Bishop will hold the line and not give any money to Ukraine no matter what, but right there, he is asserting the Republican establishment side of the controlled opposition dynamic, and that is thoroughly unacceptable. Anna Paulina Luna, Chip Roy, Bob Good, and Eli Crane each also declined to say if they would vote to bring the package to the floor. Why didn't all of them simply say no? Maybe they are manipulating a narrative. Maybe they are allowing things to take place behind the scenes. But the answer is no, and they should all say it. Particularly Chip Roy, because he is such a faker. The tough guy act does not work while you're endorsing Ron DeSantis in his high heels. Representative Andy Biggs, another Freedom Caucus member, said that he, quote, likes that it's separate bills, end quote, but pressed if that meant he would help bring the package to the floor, he demurred. We haven't even seen the bills. I mean, good grief, Biggs said, and good for Biggs. If even a handful of conservatives oppose the rule vote, then Johnson would need Democratic support to move forward. And it's incredibly rare for the minority party to assist on those rules votes. House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries declined to comment Monday on whether he expected his caucus would support the package. We're not going to come to any conclusion about process until we understand the substance. And of course, that's what he would say. This is what gives him leverage. Why would he say, yes, I'm going to bring 150 Democrats to go along with your Republicans and get this done? That just gives away his leverage. This is unipartisan legislation. The votes necessary will be taken from either side, and they will be cast by whoever it is determined by the uniparty is secure in their position or willing to abandon their position in favor of a different position. They are not running through a series of moral calculations trying to figure out what is best for the people they represent. We do not need to be children about this. Other GOP members are already drawing red lines that Johnson is unlikely to meet because they would threaten to sink Ukraine aid in the Senate. For example, Matt Gaetz said Republicans should incorporate language that mandates the Senate vote on a House-passed, conservative-favored border security bill before it can take up a Ukraine aid package. Now, I'm generally a fan of Matt Gaetz. He's probably my favorite among a really terrible set of congressmen. But there's no way that any border security package worth its salt could ever be passed or signed by the illegitimate president. So there should be no horse trading and no deal making, not on any of this. Just say no. I think the Senate should have to take a vote on our border security legislation before we are just giving a blank check, Gaetz told reporters, adding that his idea got a positive reaction within the meeting. But again, we don't need border security legislation. We need people to do their jobs and protect the border. There is no legislation that could pass and be signed by the illegitimate president that would be good for us. There's also no legislation that could be passed and signed by the illegitimate president that would then become legitimate law. So it doesn't matter what the Senate signs or what the illegitimate president signs. There are just no deals. Just say no, sit this one out, take the rest of the year off. I am still astonished that anyone thought this Republican Congress was going to be able to accomplish anything. That is not going to happen. And on Friday, Mike Gallagher, the rhino cuck from Wisconsin, is leaving Congress. The majority is quickly going to become an illusion altogether, and so the motion to vacate urge has resurfaced. Chip Roy's fellow DeSantis cuck Thomas Massey saying that he is going to join Marjorie Taylor Greene in voting and pushing forward the motion to vacate. That would be them showing us how very America first and how conservative and how Republican they are. It honestly seems like a last-ditch effort to get one of their people in there before it just simply becomes Hakeem Jeffries or Liz Cheney. And here we go with that. Plus, Johnson has a looming threat to his speakership, with Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene vowing to force a vote to oust him. She said Monday that she hadn't made a decision on when to trigger that process, but that she's, quote, firmly against the plan as it stands now, end quote. She called it another wrong direction for Speaker Johnson. He's definitely not going to be Speaker next Congress, Green said, adding it was, quote, to be determined, end quote, if he would even finish out this term. No, GOP lawmakers have explicitly said that they would join Green in voting to boot Johnson. That was this morning. Now, Massey has gotten on board. In fact, he has called for Johnson to resign, saying that that would help the Republicans get their new, more conservative speaker in place. The speaker also told members that there would be amendment votes included in the package, though it's unclear what those would be, notably absent from his proposal. Any measures to address border security, which Republicans have demanded for months. Conservatives said they would push for amendment votes on border security policies as part of the House's debate. And let's take a little tangent here. Recall that last week we talked about Donald Trump and his mastery at a process I refer to as sifting. Situations are created. We monitor the reactions. We see which people simply are not on the team and are not going to make it. And I suggested that Donald Trump and Mike Johnson's joint announcement of a bill to make sure that illegal aliens cannot vote in our elections was pushed specifically to initiate one of those sifting processes so that we could see who's unwilling to support something so basic and fundamental as making sure that our vote as Americans cannot be diluted by the votes of foreigners. Now, we know that it is a uniparty regime strategy to control, rig, and steal elections, and that the votes cast on behalf of millions of illegal aliens constitute part of their strategy and part of their control system. So uniparty politicians, even uniparty Republicans, would have a very difficult time standing up for something so basic and so fundamental. And as we watch their reactions, we can see, oh, that's someone who actually doesn't care about America at all, much less put America first. Let's make sure that this person is removed from power forever. Then we have the Iran-Israel narrative over the weekend. We see how people are reacting to that. We will get to see how they attempt to exploit that situation in order to convince people that passing all of this funding for the fake foreign proxy wars is worth it. And the process of sifting continues. It seems to me like if there were uniparty Republicans who were attempting to be our quote-unquote allies and pretend that they're on our side, the way that people like Chip Roy and Thomas Massie do, and perhaps many more, by the way, they would need to tell us that they are protecting us on all of these things without actually doing it. You can't tell us you're securing our border with legislation we don't want passed, and therefore it's okay that you voted for Ukraine and Israel spending that we also don't want passed. That doesn't work, but they're trying to sell it to the American people, and they're being helped by the Fox Newses and Daily Wires and Blazes of the world. They were happy to ignore the issue of illegal immigration for years while they were focused on making sure everyone knows they are certain almost all the time who has the wee-wees and who has the hoo-has. But now illegal aliens is a huge crisis. And on the basis of that crisis and how important it is that we get our border security, that will give them the license to pass all of the fake foreign proxy war spending and ban TikTok and do the Repo Act. All of that, they will tell us, is okay because that's how much we needed them to protect our border. And that's why this illegal alien voting bill is such a good sifting mechanism. You cannot go out there and brand yourself as very strong on the border and very good friend of Israel, while being unwilling to speak out on the fact that illegal aliens have votes cast in their name that change the outcomes of elections all across this country, sometimes directly and sometimes by the fact that there are states who have multiple electoral college votes worth of illegal aliens in their state. Those illegal aliens are counted as part of that state's population, and their electoral college votes and their seats in Congress are apportioned accordingly. That alone is such a spectacular disgrace. So will these same people who tell us how important the border is stand up and tell the country, yeah, actually, it's true. Millions of votes are cast in the name of illegal aliens, and we need to make every last effort to ensure that real lawful American votes aren't canceled out by people who aren't even American. Will we see them support that legislation? No, we probably won't. Will any of them attempt to package that legislation in with this foreign aid? Do any of them actually have the balls to do that? I would love to see Matt Gaetz do that. Bring that up. Add that to the border legislation you want passed. And hey, if it doesn't pass, we'll be okay, because these aren't real anyway. But let's have the conversation. Let's see what the GOP establishment congressmen think about allowing illegal aliens to vote in our elections while they are pretending to be conservative and care about protecting America. And I want to hit one more thing related to this package before we wrap up that article from Politico and call it a day. This is from the global regime think tank Center for Strategic and International Studies. This was published yesterday. The headline is "The Path Ahead for Supplemental Security Assistance, Ukraine and Israel in the Balance." So let's get the official think tank view on these various bills. And we're not going to go through the whole thing here. They did some Q&A down at the bottom for some reason. They are asking themselves questions and then answering them. How do Iran's attacks against Israel change the calculus? Gotta know that. I mean, it just happened 2 days ago, but surely it's going to have a massive influence on whether or not they're able to finally push the unipartisan compromise through. Just a week ago, it was clear that absolutely no one anywhere wanted to fund Ukraine, and people were really, really losing their motivation to fund Israel at all. But now Iran has attacked Israel. Therefore, the urge to fund Israel has grown just by so much. Undoubtedly, Iran's attacks on Israel increased the sense of urgency for the House to act. Among whom? Over the weekend, Speaker Johnson said that a security supplemental package would be put on the floor this week. Aid for Israel will garner a large majority of Republican support, while it will likely draw opposition from the progressive left. Conversely, Democrats remain united on Ukraine support, while the Freedom Caucus has been opposed. It's no one else, it's just the Freedom Caucus. If aid to Israel and Ukraine is packaged together, the effort would likely garner the votes to pass the House on suspension. However, Speaker Johnson would undoubtedly face anger and a possible motion to vacate from the Freedom Caucus ranks. Given the slim majority, he would be forced to turn to Democrats to save his speakership and, more importantly, save the House from the gridlock that ensued following former Speaker Kevin McCarthy's ousting last fall. Democrats have signaled that they would be willing to consider such a move if the supplemental does not contain any controversial policy riders. So the votes would be there to pass Ukraine and Israel together, except Mike Johnson would get in trouble and maybe be removed through a motion to vacate. Now, MTG already has one of those up there. Thomas Massey is calling for Johnson's resignation and saying he's going to side with MTG on this. So it's clear that this think tank knew exactly what Massey was going to do. It's almost like Massey and this globalist think tank are serving the exact same agenda, while Massey is just pretending to be very conservative and very based in the process, also supporting Ron DeSantis in his high heels, walking around wiping boogers on everybody. The bottom line is that Iran's attacks give Johnson a compelling narrative for moving forward on bipartisan legislation and doing so quickly. And if there's one thing that we all know as indoctrinated Americans, bipartisan means it's good. It means it was a real compromise. It's something that all of the American people can be happy about. Or if not, you know, happy about, you can't really get upset because your side got some things just like the other side did. And none of that is a cover or a euphemism for a unipartisan compromise. It's a bipartisan compromise. You see, there are two parties here, not just one. And both parties agree that you and your concerns are the problem. What happens if the House fails to act on Ukraine? Ukraine is in a perilous situation. In the past month, Russia has stepped up attacks against Ukraine's energy infrastructure and is slowly making gains on the battlefield. Due to supply shortages, Ukrainian forces can only fire one round of artillery for every five fired by Russian forces. Air defenses are running low. Without aid soon, Russia will undoubtedly begin to gain ground more steadily. For Ukraine, holding ground is much easier than recovering ground that has been lost. And it's cute, isn't it, how they keep telling us that they're going to retake Crimea? They're going to push Russia out of all those territories that have already voted for the Russian president and voted to be part of Russia? If Russian forces are allowed to succeed in Ukraine, they will not stop there. Europe will be destabilized, and Russian President Vladimir Putin could use Ukraine as a staging ground to threaten NATO states. Ha! Just like those NATO states have been using Ukraine as a staging ground to threaten Russia for decades. But it's not their fault. It's not their fault. They're the good guys. This would risk drawing the United States and U.S. troops into direct conflict with Russia. Well, no, it wouldn't. There's no way Joe Biden has the ability to do that. Why would he have let it get to this point? Why would the global regime have let any of this get to this point in one of their most important strongholds? Their ancestors have been fighting over this territory for over 1,000 years. After all the bluster and the lies and the nonsense over the last 2 years, they are now admitting what has always been a certainty, that there was no chance in them winning, not ever. As it stands, Ukraine is not asking for U.S. troops on the ground, only assistance. Providing requested assistance to Ukraine is not only the right thing to do, but it is in the national security interest of the United States. In a battle between a democratic world order represented by Ukraine and the authoritarian dictatorship represented by Putin's Russia, the choice should be clear. The United States should continue to stand with Ukraine. Except the choice isn't clear, because you're not presenting the choice honestly. Not only do we not want your democratic world order that is sustained, by the way, not through the will and consent of the people in that world order, but by military adventurism and stolen elections. It is a communist world order where the state exists above everything. They are telling us that we need to fund their project to maintain their control over these foreign countries. How does that count as our democracy? And of course it doesn't. I love these pieces from these think tanks because this is where you get exactly what they're trying to do. This is going to be the logic of their strategy and of their communications. They are getting all of their people on the same page. Their people are the ones who consume this information. They want everyone telling the same story for the same reasons. Because all of those government officials from the deep state and the administrative state and the military-industrial complex and former law enforcement and former intel, they are just common managers and apparatchiks in a communist regime. They are repeating the slogans they are told to repeat to push the agenda of the state forward. It is very, very simple. It seems more complicated because of how it is presented to us. We think there's no way this could be that thing that we always learned about in school, that very, very bad thing that we were told could never happen here. It just is that thing. It's time we admit it. They admit it. They're not even shy about it. It used to be a conspiracy theory to talk about a one-world global order. They say it out loud all the time. It is just assumed by their people that that is the best scenario for everyone. But let's wrap up with Politico. The speaker said he's committed to abiding by a House rule that gives lawmakers a full 72 hours to review the legislation once it's finalized. That would likely push passage votes to Friday evening. If the House passed more than one of the four bills, it's unclear if they would be packaged together before heading to the Senate. While GOP lawmakers said the upper chamber would have to take separate votes on each piece of legislation, Johnson told reporters after the meeting that he hadn't yet decided whether to send whatever bills pass over as a comprehensive package. It's unclear if Johnson has Senate support for his proposal, given the upper chamber's leaders are continuing to insist on their own bipartisan version of foreign aid legislation that combines cash for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. We are discussing whether they would be merged together in one package that's sent to the Senate or if it goes over as individual measures. My personal preference is to do it individually, but we'll let the body decide. We'll have further discussion on that in the morning, Johnson said. Now, as far as our illegitimate politicians are concerned, they love when things are packaged together so that they can just take an up or down vote on the whole thing and then dilute their responsibility for any particular part of it. It's basically just a grab bag of excuses for why they voted yes at that point. I voted yes to help Israel. I voted yes to help Ukraine. I voted yes to secure our border. I voted yes on the Repo Act to punish Russia. I voted yes to ban TikTok. And sure, I would have preferred that all those other parts weren't passed, but it was all in one thing. And I thought it was just really, really, really important for the American people that I protect them from China by banning TikTok from the App Store. And of course, you've heard this all before. You've heard this for your entire life. Remember that when the Republican majority began way back in January 2023, we were told that all spending would be voted on in single-issue spending bills. But we haven't gotten any of those. We've just gotten unipartisan compromise after unipartisan compromise, after omnibus, after minibus, after continuing resolution, and now we're getting another unipartisan compromise. It just so happens to be the same unipartisan compromise they tried to push through 6 months ago. And that was all fun and games back then. They understood that the American people weren't really going to tolerate it back then. But now we've seen for 6 months on the television, we've seen illegal aliens and the problems they cause. We've seen the horrors of Ukraine for 2 years, and they even gave us the paragliding go-kart event. And if that wasn't enough, now we have Iran attacking Israel and TikTok making your kids gay. You have to pass the legislation now. You have to. You have to pass the unipartisan compromise so that we can ban speech, steal assets and destroy the financial system, sponsor the invasion of our country, and wage proxy wars in foreign lands. You know, for America. Because we're patriots who put America first. That's what that little R next to our name means. These people are worthless. You should not let them save face. I'll be back tomorrow at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic, and Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree, linktree.com/imyourmoderator. And I'll see you soon out on the range.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'm Your Moderator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at imyourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/imyourmoderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon, down on the range.
It's happening!